Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Up the Ante. I'm your host, Dr. Alex Iannucci, joined by my co-host, Sydney Labasco.
Hello, hello.
In this episode of Up the Ante, join us as we explore the dynamic landscape of higher education, specifically the nuance of free speech versus hate speech. To unpack these complexities, we are honored to have Ariella Robbins rejoin us for another conversation. Hello.
Hi. Thank you for having me back.
It's a privilege to have you with us because of the role that you play in your organization. You know, it is a very senior role. It is a role that, you know, sets vision and standard for your organization. And I'm just curious, from your experience, what do you think are threats to inclusion, right? So we're seeing this like really dramatic increase based, I think, on some, you know, a few different moments that you've named in our previous episode, mm-hmm. right around, you know, I think COVID mm-hmm. really changed things. Mm-hmm. I think George Floyd's murder changed things. So, you know, so we've seen this like increase in resources in some places, but I definitely think we're in a time of threat as well. So I'm curious to know what you think.
And if I could just add, for folks who didn't catch our episode with Ariella, if you could just reiterate for us what you do in higher education, what your role is.
Oh, yeah,
as
absolutely.
You answer your question.
Yeah, so I am a assistant vice president in the Office of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion for a local university. Wow, what are the threats?
Yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like higher ed is juggling a lot,
yeah.
as it always has, right? So that's also not new, but it's juggling a lot and it's managing a lot. In terms of threat, I would definitely name the political landscape that we are currently in. I think wherever you fall on the political spectrum, you might feel attacked, or you might feel that something that you care deeply about is being threatened in some way. And so what I mean by that specifically are the bans around diversity, equity, and inclusion education, mm-hmm. around diversity, equity, and inclusion topics, offices, right? And so folks are out of their jobs in some places in the country. Not allowed to allocate resources towards DEI efforts. And so I think, you know, that is clearly a threat and a big thing that higher ed is having to manage and navigate. And especially, you know, 3 years ago, the push was to put a whole lot of money into DEI.
Yeah, that's why I ask, because the shift is dramatic.
It is jarring.
Yeah.
Yes, it's jarring, right? And so there for some people, again, regionally, depending on where you're positioned and also the positionality of your institution, right? But for some people, it is very much a jarring shift where you go from creating some office or getting a line to now maybe being on the job market yourself, right? And so and that threat, I think, has been guised in many different ways. Some, you know, in the sense of labeling it as wokeness, sort of woke ideology, I think is the language that is often used, right? And this sense of like not being like true American, whatever that is scheduled to mean for folks, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that is definitely one of the threats that comes to mind for me.
Yeah.
I mentioned before in the previous episode too, just the pushback on higher ed right now in general, around the return on investment, around the cost of higher education, around how higher education is managing the mental health of its students and really all its constituents, I think is another thing that is also coming up.
We're seeing young folks who are attending colleges having higher rates of mental health concerns, more so than any other generation.
Mm-hmm.
And as a systems level thinker, I can't help but question, this can't just be every individual person is struggling now with mental health. Something is happening as a society, at a system level, that a collective generation is hurting. Mm-hmm. So like, yes, I do believe, I love mental health supports. I see a therapist. It's been transformational for how I think of myself, how I think of the world. Shout out to my therapist. Thank you for all your work. And And what else are we doing at a systems level to be like, how do we attack the conditions that create this mental health impact? Mm. Because therapies deal with the results. Mm. Mm-hmm. They deal with what's left after the harm has been done. I also believe that addressing mental health concerns on college campuses need to attack the conditions that create those results too. So I'm wondering what you all think about that. Because I don't hear a lot of people talking about it in this way when we're talking about mental health supports on college campuses.
And you can translate that to organizations, right? So like
yes.
Lens is higher ed, but we can talk K-12. We can talk large corporate, yeah. small owned, business owned. What do you think the conditions are that are impacting it?
I think that folks at this particular moment in time, as we've talked about before, are feeling the impacts of power and oppression and have the language, the access, and the self-efficacy to say, this isn't working for me anymore. Mm-hmm.
Totally.
Because racism has been a part of American society early on, since the get. And so people have always been sitting with that and sitting with that pain and strife. So I think it's more relevant now and more salient right now because one, mental health is slightly destigmatized and folks have the language and are using the internet and are using ways to connect in a global way to be like, oh, y'all are feeling this too. Mm-hmm. Y'all are feeling this and are experiencing the world like this too. Let's do something about it. We don't have to sit in this anymore. Mm. So I think that the systems of power are the conditions that create these things. And so when we're thinking about equity work and the structural ways in which colleges, institutions, corporations can support the mental health of people, yes, providing leave. Yes, having your insurance cover therapies. Yes, making sure that college campuses have adequate numbers of therapists that know and can support minoritized experiences. Mm-hmm. And that is important. And how do we stop this cycle from happening? Mm.
I think it's also been the generational shift too.
I was just gonna say that.
Right? Because, yes. You know, I think if I think about my mom's generation or even quite honestly how I was raised, you deal, right? Like we all have stuff. Life is hard. It is not going to be easy. You manage. You move on, right? Mm-hmm. Like you lick your wounds and you go to the next thing because around the next corner, there's going to be another thing. And so many people grew up with that message of having to stuff it down. Stuff it down. We got our stuff. Like I got mine, you know? So many people grew up with that message of just having to manage their own things and not have a place or not feel that they are burdening somebody else by sharing. Mm. And so there was no outlet, or there was a lack of outlet, should I say, right? Like there was a lack of outlet and a lack of space where people could share that. Whereas as you named, I do think the younger generation with access, with all these things that we have, all the tools that we have found a way to be able to name it within themselves. And I actually do believe it's coming back up to the older generation too. I see older folks who are also naming depression, who are also naming their feels and needing to pause and to take time for themselves. And so I think the generational shift also had a part in it.
Yeah, I would agree with you because I feel like you and I talk about this too, being, is your mom a boomer? Mm. I'm also raised by boomers. And I think the generational positioning of someone's experience is also really interesting right now. So it's the first time ever where there's been five generations of people in the workforce.
Yeah.
Right. So when you're talking
and
about
people can't retire.
No.
So they're working longer too. Yeah. So it really is a lot of generations.
And think about that. Right. So you have, you know, young people coming into the workforce, you know, saying, you know, I teach, I'm also a faculty member, and I have a program I teach where there's a range, right? We have everyone from Gen Z to boomers in it. And, you know, we had this conversation and I had one of my students say, yeah, I turned a job down last week because the vibe was off. And I had someone in the boomer in the room be like, what does that even mean? Yeah. And some people
and
are
I'm like, that makes total sense.
Right?
Absolutely.
And so there's just a difference in how we communicate, I think, you know, what works for ourselves in ways that, that we're seeing this traumatic difference. And so I think it is, you know, the outcome of this is going to be this really large breakdown in people like don't, you know, this mental wellness. I think, but I do appreciate your point that older generations are also starting to say, okay, I have permission to say this isn't working either. Mm-hmm. But I just think that when organizations are led by people in different generations, trying to understand the new needs, yeah. I think is also part of this equity conversation, right? So think about that too. When we talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion, historically, you know, oftentimes we're thinking about, you know, we're talking about gender, race, sexuality. We're also talking about well-being and neurodiversity and generational inclusion. So, you know, for us, when we talk about this work, it's always very expansive. It's always very broad. And so, you know, we want to always remind people of that as well. It's a yes and because we aren't singular. Identities are not singular. No. And the experiences are multifaceted.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And in the articles that I've been reading about higher education and what's been coming up, some of the conditions that I hear a lot about is around how people are speaking on campus, what language is allowed to be said on campus.
Can you censor it?
So this relationship between hate speech, what is hate speech? Is it definable? And to what extent are institutions responsible to draw a line somewhere? Mm-hmm. At least in what I've seen, that seems to be a lot of what current higher education students are naming that really impact their mental health and their experience on campuses.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Am I giving you flashbacks to like things that are happening at work for you?
It's very current.
It is.
Like free speech versus hate speech is like, it's a right now topic.
And I think just to, and we can sneak this in later too, but just to think of the current part of it, also on the heels of the Supreme Court decision from affirmative action too, right? So it's just this constant sort of something chopping at the block of all these different experiences that are related to people's identities and related to how someone navigates a university or organization or institution, or right, how people are managing themselves in these different spaces that for some were definitely not set up for them anyway.
Right.
Right. And so, yeah, I think with this piece around free speech and hate speech, it is a challenging. It doesn't have to be. Legally, it is a challenging line to walk.
Well, and can I just jump in for a second, too? Because the connection between equity work and law is so close. Mm-hmm. And I just want to say that to like the audience and the viewers. In a lot of the work that I've done around social justice and equity, our biggest teammates would be general counsel, yeah. right? Because yeah. of the type of environment you're working in. So I just wanted to highlight that
yeah.
point because you dropped it in there, but it's that connection. Like, do you work closely?
You have to.
Isn't it amazing?
You have to.
It's amazing.
There's so many landmines that you could potentially step on. And so I really like the way you framed it as partnership, because it sometimes doesn't always feel that way. But, you know, that partnership I think is important because, you know, in my experience, it has been that folks are trying to block you from doing things, but it's just trying to figure out
how do you protect it?
How yep. do you keep it? How do you sustain it so that it doesn't end up in some court case and get turned over, you know, create
sure.
unnecessary issues.
Sure. But do you think you can, what was the question you asked about defining hate speech?
Yeah, because you had brought it up really and to say what institutions are bound to do mm-hmm. is often defined by what we are bound to do as U.S. citizens.
Yes.
Yep.
And so while we all have this maybe shared understanding of what we think hate speech is, it's not actually something that is arrestable, I guess I'll say.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that poses a real challenge
it does.
For institutions who are being called
yep.
to draw that line.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a nice way, that is like the nicest I'll be towards institutions about that, because I do recognize that is the challenge. And I think some institutions do have the capacity to draw a line somewhere because they are their own institution and people can choose to join them.
Yeah.
And it, a line can be drawn, but when you're working with counsel, legal counsel, I think that they really encourage people to proceed with caution in that mm-hmm. area. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm curious mm-hmm. how that may have like shown up for you.
Yeah.
In defining hate speech and working with
yeah, and can you
counsel.
Do you think you can define it?
Yeah.
And do you think organization or like higher education institutions can enforce it?
I don't think that you can define it in a like a definition of hate speech defined in a university policy outside of what the law defines it as. Now, what I do think you could do is as a community hold what we are going to do and what is allowed or what we will tolerate or what we encourage our space to be. So it, like legally, right, there's this thing of what it is or what it has to meet to fit some sort of criteria. And as a community, we are going to uphold that we are going to create space where all of our people can thrive. And so I think you have to then put more of the focus on this is who we are as a community. Mm. And this is how we're going to hold each other up as a community in this space. And we want to, our community has to be safe for all people, mm-hmm. right? Our community has to be a community that is inclusive for all people. Mm. Our community has to be a community where people can share and we can have disagreement, right? But it is not going to be at the cost of violence for someone.
Mm. It's an interesting point you make too, because I, you know, a lot of the things I'm reading, the discussions I've been around hate speech, did you say you don't think you can define it? I would agree with you, because I feel like back to the point of everyone has a bias, right? You might be someone that's trying to define what hate speech means to protect a certain community of people while leaving out another community mm-hmm. of people.
Right.
So is there a universal understanding of what that means? I'm not sure there is, right? Mm. Just because you might know people who are diverse or people who have diverse identities doesn't mean they're automatically inclusive holistically of all people, right? Mm-hmm. Because we have biases. So that complicated nature of being able to define what hate means, back to your point about, you know, if you're building an app, like it's through the lens of someone.
Right.
So can you really say this is hate and it be truly inclusive?
Right. And we're not off the hook.
Right.
Like, it's really challenging, and it feels like a massive mountain. If people who are doing this work, if an AVP and a business owner who like are in DE&I are like, it's pretty undefinable. Like people who are just told to figure this out must be like underwater with trying to figure out how to move forward. And I think that we have a sense of responsibility to stay connected, to keep the conversation mm-hmm. alive, open, agree. Critiquing it, and making sure that our institutions are moving with where people are going and what's present at a particular moment in time.
Mm.
Yeah. And I just want to lift up what you said, the ability to critique it. Right. And so I think that's a part of the conversation around this, the need for education and the reason why there sort of is no definition, because the idea is that in an educational setting, you should be able to have conversations around that. Now, again, we know terms hurt, right? And those types of things make it difficult and make it challenging for people to even want to engage, as would it do for myself too, right? And we have to figure it out mm-hmm. because folks are being harmed on campuses and having just a very difficult, mm-hmm. difficult and challenging experience, challenging of their identity and how they see themselves. And so we have to have the ability to be able to name it, to critique it, and to offer a louder voice of who we are, what we tolerate, mm-hmm. how we're going to connect, what our truth is. You know, we have to be able to speak loudly.
Amplify.
Thank you. We have to be able to amplify the messages and the information that we want to share.
I really, really love that point, because I constantly find myself confused, right? Why? And I know why, right? But I think that, you know, there's a loud, loud voice of anti things, right? And like, we don't want to include, or we are going to keep it this way. And I think to kind of like really uplift what you're saying, you know, if more people would just be like, actually, nope, these are just the community standards, right? What are the community standards? So I actually want to go back to that.
This is baseline.
Well, and you said it like as a, you know, for me, it's a solution, right? So you had said there is this legal component, which again, we hold multiple truths, right? We recognize there are legal issues when talking about inclusion work. Like that is a heavy thing to have to navigate. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't get you off the hook. So I love that point, which means then there's a third option, right? So the third option is, what is your community's identity? Is there one? Have you enforced it? And how do you set a standard within it? Because no one's suggesting that you're going against the law, but it doesn't mean you can't achieve community that has care. And so, you know, have you seen that, especially in this, you know, controversial time?
Yeah, I mean, I think overall it's a struggle. And yeah. And mainly I think that just because of the way in which the conversation is heightened right now. I think generally speaking, trying to be optimistic, folks do want to show care.
Yes.
And folks do want to create policies that are going to uplift and use language that are going to hold people to having a environment that is going to allow them to thrive. And so I do think higher ed can be a destination for that. And in many cases is a destination for that. And I think we are caught in this moment of we're not doing it good enough. Mm. Right. And so we got to go back to the drawing board and figure out, okay, What was the misstep? How do we then show up better? How do we show up more courageously? Because I think we are being caught in that scarcity, in that fear that we talked about in the first episode, right? We are fearful and we are walking timidly. Mm-hmm. And with caution. And you know, many people need health insurance and work, and right, and so there are many layers to that. So I don't mean to just say that blanketly. And there's a lot more that we can do.
Yes, because I'm hearing from you like this sense of accountability. Because as you just named, Alex, I'm not saying that you don't have a right to say it, but with all of your freedoms, this is how you choose to say. This is what you choose to act. Yeah,
and are you okay?
Are you okay?
Because who's saying it? Like, are you fine?
Right. And you will have to face the accountability of the impact of your words.
Well, that's
how you choose to enact your freedom to say something doesn't absolve you from the impact that it has on people. And that's where I think policy can really live, because I'm looking to restore the situation. I think oftentimes when folks are having conversations, we might be a little bit conditioned to think punitively.
Mm,
And I'm really interested in allowing these moments to be community transformations. And you, as I keep saying, like, you're not off the hook. You are responsible for how you made the environment that you created in somebody else in your community's presence.
Yeah. Well, and so I just want to linger here for a second, because I think the solution you're naming is really important, right? There is a legal component to this that you might not be able to
change.
And there is a community that's impacted, right? So that's where you can lean. Mm. My question though would be, okay, so let's say you are trying to make these changes in your community based on the impact of something someone said. Is there a potential lawsuit there, though? Right. So how do we play that out? Because that is always where it goes. Right. So you can have the law, but then you have this community standard. But what if a student's held to a standard because they said something really discriminatory, but they're allowed to, quote, say it legally, but the community is holding them accountable?
Yeah.
What happens then?
I mean, I think that there's always a threat of a lawsuit.
Yeah. It's so true. I don't even mean to laugh, but it's so true.
I mean, I think that there's
life.
No, it is, right? It's where we are, right? So there is always a threat of a lawsuit happening. And I think the part of what I'm hearing Sydney say too, again, back to that not being punitive. So it's, you know, depending on the situation, right? Mm-hmm. But like, maybe it's not that you are getting expelled from the university, right? Like, maybe it's not that you're getting kicked out or you're not getting sanctioned, but maybe now you have to do some conversations.
Sure.
Right? Like maybe now there is some community service. Maybe now there is a paper or some research that you have to do. Sure. Right? But it is really bringing in some of that learning. Mm-hmm. Maybe, and this is the hard part, right? Because this is the part where even you personally might be affected, but you're trying to figure out how to change the things. Mm-hmm. And so you also may be working against something that you might personally feel is like the way that things are happening, but like the good of the institution, right? So maybe you are meeting someone where they are and trying to help them move to a different place if they're willing to be a part of that journey, right? So I think just in part of the idea of a lawsuit, if you are going to sue for having to do a community conversation, right, that feels different than someone being kicked out. So I do think that you have some leverage in what does that community response look like.
Like that, like restorative justice.
Yes.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And employment relationships, students attending these colleges, there are contracts. Like when you sign up, they say, this student code of conduct is our contract with you. Mm-hmm. So they're agreeing to these terms. To what extent are institutions putting language around this in those contracts, in those terms, so that it is transparent? And we're saying, this is who we are. Here is our line in the sand. And here are some possibilities of how we might move through that. Because that's important. And I will also say that as a human being, when I have messed up, when I have harmed people, when I was approached with accountability and it allowed me to transform, I have forever been a better person because of it. I don't know if I would have been the person that I am today if I just like doubled down and was like, well, I didn't mean to. Mm-hmm. And I have the right to say this. Mm-hmm. Are you okay? Mm-hmm. Where's that coming from? Because I'm asking you if, I mean, I'm telling you that like you hurt me and you're saying, well, I have a right to hurt you. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's a different starting place that I think yields transformation or a need for transformation and healing.
Yeah. And I think even the next layer of not just the individual, right, but to the point of the institution, that accountability looks like, how are you managing your climate then? There was a harm that occurred, you know, whatever the incident happened, how are you managing that? Where are the conversations? Where are the reaching out? Where are the statements for whatever they might be worth? But there are some things that an institution can do that are not illegal or that are not going to get you sued, right?
Totally.
Like you can respond in a particular way that holds up someone who's been harmed.
So I would say then another assumption would be the next office that you work closely with would be like a communications office. Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Okay. Before all of that communicating. Okay.
Yeah.
So what are some, so for those listening then, what would you say are some best practices or, you know, solutions? If you have some conflict in a community, right? There's a divide in perspective, you know, what are your strategies? What have you seen go well and maybe not?
I mean, I think maybe the first part and a strategy is identifying where you stand.
Where you stand.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Like, so, who are you?
Like mission.
Mission.
Yeah.
Who are you in this moment?
And this is why organizational change is important in this work.
Right? Because how do you build a strategy from that? It's not going to stick, right? You can't sustain it. So who are you? And then if you are a institution or organization that is really strong in your mission, then you use that to move through. Right. Yeah. And so if this is your mission, what is your mission calling you to do? Mm. Right. And then you strategize accordingly from there. And again, back to our previous conversation, it likely needs to be layered. That is not a one training, you know, a one town hall type of event.
Right.
And there needs to be a layered response. Different people across the institution need to feel seen, need to feel heard, need to be at the minimum invited to the conversation.
Yeah, and it's a great strategy, and it feels simple.
It does.
But it's not. Very strategic. And again, I don't know if you both would agree, but, you know, so often when there's conflict, I find that inside the organizations, the people in those leadership roles are responding from their person instead of as an agent of the organization, right? And again, I think it's hard to separate because I definitely deeply believe that like your person and professional identities are very tied. But back to your mission point, people panic because it's almost like they're thinking about it for the first time every time versus just saying, what is my mission? Tell me is true.
Yes.
About the identity of this organization. Because remember, you have people inside your organizations who have identities, but your organization also has an identity, right? It has a tone. It has a stance on things. So playing back to your mission is your initial strategy. But I find, I don't know if you would agree, people go to their person. Like, how would I respond to this versus say, and they, I think oftentimes they'll say, we're thinking about the organization, but if they did that, they would just repeat the mission. And so, you know, it's so often you're like, you're working through emails and making statements and you're just like, does it feel new every time?
Yeah. And I think, yes, it does. for many people, it does. And it also, I think, would depend on the type of organization or institution, right? Because many folks are not used to dealing with large scale conflict or, you know, things that might be happening in the world. If you've been able to sort of go under the radar for a while or not on some top university list or what have you. But always go back to it.
Right.
Always go back to it.
Right. Give you the answer.
And gives you the answer. And again, you know, based on what is happening, context and environment, totally. All those things may look different and need to be applied. But if you go back to your mission, it gives you your next steps.
Mm-hmm.
Who are we? And then how do I do it? How do I move forward? Right. Mm-hmm. And then that's where you bring your different voices into the room as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We have to move with intention. We have to, because when we're just experiencing, reacting, it's not strategic. It's not strategic to just respond to things.
Yes.
We have to be able to be thoughtful and intentional and to define ourselves as to who we are. And again, this happens at an individual level and an institutional level. Mm-hmm. Individually, what are our values? It's so easy to go into an autopilot and just be moving through space and time, not thinking about those values.
Mm-hmm.
When we put those more salient in our minds at the forefront of us, we are more caring, we're connected to community, and we do feel a greater sense of purpose and purpose in our lives and connection with others. And institutions can mirror the same thing. We don't have to just respond to or react to the instances of harm that are here.
Mm-hmm.
Who are we? We've already defined ourselves. We have these beautiful mission statements and values. What do they look like in action?
Mm-hmm.
When we're coming up with responses, how do we lean on our values in action to do something? How does that become our first line of questioning?
Yes.
As we're looking for a response, because back to our earlier conversation, this cut and paste, here's the way I always do it, is not going to fit.
Mm-hmm.
What is the perspective, the point of view, the context of this moment, and how do the values intersect with it? So just like we came up with different ways to approach a workshop based on the people who were there, the response to these things has to be similar too.
Yeah, I really appreciate the values point, especially coming from organizational change management, because if you think about within group connection, you're all united by something. Organizations have the same pulse, right? So what are the values? Does everybody know what they are? And are we using them in a way that unifies, right? And so I think, you know, strategically ask those questions if a conflict arises or you're not sure how to respond to something, or you want to make change in your organization, start with your mission, vision, and values, because it is already a standard, and how you use it to be innovative is transformational. Go ahead.
I was just going to, you know, I like to kind of collect what I'm hearing. And so as we're talking about hate speech and freedom of speech, I'm hearing us really call people and institutions to define for themselves, who are you? What is your identity? And that is where we hold people accountable to.
Mm-hmm. All right, Ariella. So I'm curious, we were talking about these trends in higher education. You know, how are they impacting you personally and professionally?
Ooh. Where do I start? Where do I start? Yeah, I think it is when you do the, especially in doing DEI, you just also become the work in some way, right? And so, because you are trying to, you're managing your identities while also trying to like manage them in the institutional space and push things forward and try to like make things better for different identities and different people and all people. And so that comes up a lot for me often and all the time, as a Black person, as a Black woman in higher education and leadership in higher education, where there are not many other women of color folks, like there, it's just not there. And so oftentimes being in spaces, one, as a DEI person, I have to speak that lens, right? Like that is my job, but also knowing that there's no one else in the room who's going to speak it. So like, if you're not there, it is not getting done.
Wow.
Right. Yep. Like, so, you know, I think that is definitely a big part in it. Having to always be the person to speak up and share out and, push back against things, sometimes maybe being labeled as difficult because you have to keep raising your hand to ask the questions that other folks maybe aren't willing to ask or don't see because it's not pertaining to their identities. Managing the climate issues that you are also like managing in your daily life, but like having to manage them for the sake of the institution or for the sake of the person that has been harmed, comes up definitely a lot in the work that I do. And just having to move and navigate through the experience of higher ed. Historically, higher ed was not created for people of color, right? Like that came a little later, right? Mm-hmm. And so, and even that there are some challenges, right? But so the space is still not innately open or inclusive or understanding. And so having to build that is why I'm there, right? Like it's a part of my calling to be there.
So it's not 9 to 5.
No.
Yeah, there's no breaks from it.
No, there isn't. Mm-mm. There isn't. There really isn't. You live it because it's your life. Like it's my identity, so it's my life. And so you never unsee it, right? Like you're in social spaces, you're in the movies, you're in the mall, and you're like, oh, look at that interaction. Oh, did you see? Right? So it's always, your brain is always like going off.
I do think that's an important thing to note for anyone listening who's in a, like an equity role. And again, not to overgeneralize, but it, to your point, when you start to see things, you cannot unsee them.
Right.
And so it is, it's different than, you know, maybe going to a job where you're like clocking in, clocking out. Like there aren't caps to it.
Yes.
Right? When you see inequity or when you champion work, it's not, it's like you're doing it everywhere. It doesn't stop for you.
Oh, it goes. Like something will come up on the news and now I'm down the rabbit hole, right?
Yes.
Now I got to research it, figure out, oh, wait, what institution, what region of the world? Like, oh, okay, how does this impact mine?
Yeah.
All those things, they are constantly on your mind.
Yeah. How do I bring it up in staff meeting? If I'm seeing it now, are there other people in my institution who are living this and feeling this?
Yes.
Yep. And for folks who experience privilege, I heard you say like, sometimes people's identities are like, they're like, I don't have to really care about this.
Yep.
How do we start to choose caring every time to make it no longer optional for us? And I think a lot of equity advocates model that well. So like, that's a great example of like, what's in the news? How is it going to show up on my campus? Maybe it impacts me and my identities, but I know that any effort towards liberation and the reduction of harm is going to be a part of my own liberation.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think that it is just beyond a 9 to 5. And it's really vulnerable.
It is.
Like you are just out there as yourself all the time. And I think a lot of people have strategies at work to protect themselves, keep people at an arm's length. This is a workplace. And there are other people who don't have that option. You're just vulnerable as yourself in those spaces. If you're the only person in the staff meeting asking these questions, well, then you're also, there's no one there to have your back too.
No.
So it's the courage to say it and somebody, and there might not be anyone there to have your back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so for folks who do experience privilege, how do you have somebody's back?
Yeah. And just that empathy to say, wow, maybe someone can't turn this off. Like, if you know nothing else, start there to say, wow, what would it feel like to have to be on all the time?
All the time.
So, you know, I think, again, but I want to wrap, you know, I want to kind of like, we really appreciate this dialogue, but I, you know, just a kind of like culminating question, if I can, what is your advice? And, you know, how do you keep going?
Yeah. I think, again, it comes back to your why. It comes back to your reason. And so whether that be personal, very personal, or whether that be for the work, to me, that's what it comes back to. I always think about, I talk about doing the things or living life or just trying to make spaces in the world better. Mm. But specifically, I'm talking about for my child, right? Like, we're all, like, at this point, we're adults. Like, we've inhibited it. We got to figure it out. And, like, hopefully we will leave our mark, right? But part of my work is trying to make it better for the people who are coming up behind me. Mm. You know, definitely thinking about, I believe in being a good steward. And so in order to get more, you have to be a good steward of what you have. Mm. And so to keep going, I have to do good. I have to, like, do the things that are going to help so that I can continue to get more resources to continue to do the work. Mm. And so for me, that is a part of my why and why I keep going. And I think once you have that, then you can endure more, right? Like, not to say the pain isn't going to go away. Mm-hmm. The hard times is not going to go away. The institutions of oppression are not disappearing, right? But because I can remain centered or have a bigger idea of why I am doing this work, it becomes helpful for me to endure. And so when you're able to endure, then you tap into your courage and, like, figure out, how do you challenge? Find your voice. Mm. What does that look like? If you are not the lead singer, cool, right? But, like,
right.
Then where do you go, right? Like, are you on the drums? Are you holding the snare? Like, what do you do, right? Like, you know, figure out your role, because if you are doing it from someone else's idea of what it should look like, then it's not going to last. Mm. It's not going to work for you, right? Because that's just hard to hold up to, right? So, like, figure out what makes sense for you. How do you keep doing that? And then how do you keep stretching yourself? We always talk about this, right? Like, we've never arrived. There's things change, life change, world change, context change, language changes. And so continue to learn, right? Like, you have to be a forever student. Mm. You have to be a forever student. And so as you continue to learn, you continue to grow. And then you continue to implement and impart that new wisdom.
Mm. Ariella, thank you so much for your wisdom and leveraging your expertise and your knowledge and care to us. This has been really fun, and I hope we get to have you back again soon.
Yeah. Yes.
Thank you, Ariella.
Thank you. It was a blast. Thank you for having me.
For past and future episodes of Up the Ante, follow us for free on Apple, Spotify, and YouTube. Just search for Up the Ante. That's ANTI. Don't forget to subscribe, and thanks again for listening.